One king, two crowns, and a family drama that tore a continent apart. How did the feud between an uncle and his nephew ignite an almost century-long war that forever reshaped the map of Northern Europe and altered the balance of power in the Baltic? Trade, fleets, control over the coastline, all turned into a battleground between two ambitious states, the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth and the Swedish Empire. This wasn't just a war for the crown. It was a bloody struggle for the region's future, exhausting and uncompromising. Sigismund III Vasa, son of the Swedish King John III and Polish Princess Catherine Jagiellon, became the symbol of a dynastic union that could have changed the course of European history. In 1587, he was elected king of the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth, and just 5 years later, in 1592, after his father's death, he inherited the Swedish crown. Thus, he united two vast European powers under his rule. Sigismund was a devout Catholic and tried to restore Catholicism in predominantly Protestant Sweden. Naturally, this caused tremendous dissatisfaction among the Swedish aristocracy and commoners, who firmly defended their Lutheran faith. Moreover, Sigismund attempted to rule Sweden from Krakow, which only heightened tensions and weakened his position. His distant rule was seen as a sign of indifference to the kingdom's affairs. John III's younger brother and Sigismund's uncle, Duke Charles, led the Swedish opposition, unwilling to obey a Catholic king who lived overseas. Charles was elected regent of Sweden and effectively ruled the country with the Riksdag during Sigismund's absence. Tensions in the Swedish Empire escalated. While in Poland, Sigismund relied on loyal supporters in Sweden. One of the most devoted was Klaus Fleming, governor of Finland, who refused to recognize Charles as regent. This became one of the reasons for open conflict. Charles, seeking to undermine Fleming's authority, incited Finnish peasants to revolt. Thus began the so-called Cudgel War. The rebels, lacking a clear goal, started killing Fleming's administrators, looting estates, and destroying symbols of authority. They demanded justice, lower taxes, and punishment for corrupt officials. Some genuinely believed Regent Charles supported their struggle, but Klaus Fleming responded harshly. His forces crushed the uprising in blood. Hundreds of peasants were killed or executed, and villages were burned. Survivors were forced to swear loyalty. Though the rebellion was extinguished, it left chaos and further destabilized the region. While the Cudgel War raged in Finland, Charles launched a military campaign against Sigismund's supporters, declared Fleming a traitor, and prepared for a tough campaign. Nevertheless, the course of events changed abruptly in 1597 with Fleming's death. Without his firm leadership, resistance to the regent quickly crumbled. Charles seized the opportunity to establish control over Finland. What could have become a prolonged civil war ended with a victory for the regent. Yet, despite this triumph, the war against Sigismund was only just beginning. In July 1598, Sigismund decided to reclaim actual power in Sweden. After years of disputes and losing control, he launched a military expedition. His army mostly consisted of Polish-Lithuanian mercenaries and loyal Swedish nobles. Meanwhile, Sigismund's Finnish allies, led by Governor Arvid Stolarm, landed in Uppland. Nevertheless, Charles's allies and local farmers repelled them. These events entered history as the Sausage Campaign. Peasants captured sacks of sausages from the Finns, a small but symbolic victory for Charles that went down in the chronicles. At the same time, Sigismund, through political maneuvering and military posturing, took the southern coastal city of Kalmar without a fight, a key stronghold. After its fall, Duke Charles was in serious trouble. The Polish army won over some of the Swedish nobility. Stockholm, lacking proper defense, was easily captured with help from the nobility and officers from Götaland. Still, the focal point of the campaign was the castle of Stegeborg, one of the main fortresses in eastern Sweden. There, on September 18, 1598, a battle took place that could have changed the fate of Sigismund and all of Scandinavia. Charles's army was less disciplined, but more motivated. They faced a well-equipped force, reinforced by Polish cavalry. It was this cavalry, highly trained and unusually fast by Swedish standards, that decided the outcome of the battle. Charles's troops were defeated, some soldiers deserted, and the rest retreated in disorder. Sigismund won, but did not destroy Charles's forces. This hesitation proved fatal. He attempted negotiations, still hoping for a compromise with the opposition. The result was a two-day ceasefire, during which Sigismund sought support, though the Swedish fleet blocked the sea, preventing reinforcements from arriving from Poland. Sigismund saw the naval blockade as an act of aggression. He sent his troops to advance on Linköping. Charles's army pursued them. The decisive battle took place at Stångebro, near Linköping. As Charles's army approached from the east, Sigismund's army moved to intercept. Both sides met near two old bridges over the Stången River. Thick fog concealed troop movements. Duke Charles attacked first, securing a swift victory at one of the bridges. He then redirected his forces to the other bridge, where Sigismund's troops held strong positions on the eastern bank. Charles's forces retreated to a nearby hill, where fierce fighting broke out. The turning point came when Swedish units in Sigismund's army refused to fight their countrymen. The army was demoralized. Sigismund was forced to request a truce. He returned to Poland, abandoning the throne and Sweden. But Charles didn't stop at a military triumph. In 1599, the Swedish Riksdag officially deposed Sigismund. Thus, a family quarrel turned into a political catastrophe. Sweden and the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth became bitter enemies. For Sigismund, the loss of the crown marked the start of a long conflict. He never accepted defeat and considered himself the rightful king of Sweden for the rest of his life. Sigismund's desire to regain the Swedish crown triggered a new phase of confrontation, escalating into a full-scale war between the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth and Sweden. The conflict began in the summer of 1600, when Sigismund III Vasa declared the annexation of Swedish Estonia into the Commonwealth. This became the immediate cause for the Swedish invasion of Livonia under Regent Charles. The Commonwealth was forced to fight on two fronts. In the south, its armies vied for influence in the Principality of Moldavia, while in the north, Swedish aggression was beginning. The Swedish army quickly gained numerical superiority. At the start of the war, they seized control not only of Estonia, but also much of Livonia, the Commonwealth's territory south of Estonia, known as Livland. In response, the Commonwealth's army under Krzysztof Radziwiłł dealt several defeats to the Swedes and recaptured the fortress of Venden. In 1601, Sigismund III Vasa recalled Jan Karol Chodkiewicz from Moldavia to enlist him in the war against Sweden. The first major victory of Commanders Chodkiewicz and Radziwiłł was the Battle of Kokenhausen. Near the already captured town, Commonwealth forces clashed with Karl Ulenhielm's army. The battle began with a Finnish cavalry attack on the left flank, which initially pushed back Lithuanian horsemen. The situation changed when the winged hussars entered the fray and repelled the attackers. On the opposite flank, the Swedes also had early success, until Radziwiłł sent in his hussars, forcing the Swedish cavalry to flee. The remnants of the Swedish force were easily routed. This battle became one of the most dazzling victories of the Commonwealth's cavalry, halting the Swedish advance. Soon after, Grand Crown Hetman Jan Zamoyski arrived in Livonia with the main Polish-Lithuanian force. Charles, with the bulk of his army, retreated, but left garrisons in castles. As a result, Zamoyski didn't pursue him and focused on besieging Valmiera and Felin. By the following year, most of the lost territory was retaken. Nevertheless, the harsh conditions of the campaign took a toll on Zamoyski's health. He handed command to the experienced Jan Chodkiewicz, who continued the offensive. Despite financial difficulties, Chodkiewicz steadily won victories and captured fortress after fortress. In 1603, he took Tartu, and in 1604, won the Battle of Weissenstein, Whitestone. That same year, Charles was proclaimed King of Sweden, and the Riksdag allocated funds for continuing the war against the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth. After this, two Swedish armies landed in Estonia near Reval and Pärnu. At the same time, another Swedish force laid siege to the fortress of Dunamunda near Riga, but without success. Following this failure, the Swedes began the siege of Riga. Chodkiewicz set out to aid the city, but upon learning of Swedish reinforcements from the north, he withdrew to Kirkholm. Charles IX, confident of an easy victory, pursued the Polish-Lithuanian army along the Daugava River. On September 27, 1605, they met in battle. The Swedish army formed up on a hill in four lines. The first consisted of four infantry battalions, the second, cavalry, the third, six infantry battalions, and the fourth, more cavalry. The infantry was arranged in squares, with pikemen in the center and musketeers on the edges. Passages were left between the squares to allow cavalry maneuvering. Jan Karol Chodkiewicz deployed his forces in the traditional deep Polish battle formation. The left flank was significantly stronger, while the right consisted of fewer hussars. In the center was the Hetman's own company, 300 hussars led by Vicenty Wojna, along with a strong unit of reiters. For hours, Chodkiewicz kept the Swedes tense with short attacks by light cavalry. Then he used a deceptive maneuver. He feigned a retreat. His units began to fall back, simulating panic. Charles IX believed the Polish forces were fleeing and ordered his soldiers to descend the slope, exposing their flanks. This was exactly what Chodkiewicz had been waiting for. At the decisive moment, the Poles opened devastating fire, and Vicenty Wojna's winged hussars charged the Swedish lines, causing chaos in the infantry. On the right flank, around 1,000 hussars swiftly crushed the enemy cavalry and broke through the Swedes' 3rd infantry line. Simultaneously, 650 hussars struck powerfully on the left flank. King Charles IX sent in his last reserves, but Chodkiewicz immediately responded with his own. The Polish cavalry utterly defeated the Swedes. In just half an hour, the Swedish cavalry had completely retreated from both flanks. Their infantry in the center was left defenseless against the hussars' devastating charge and Chodkiewicz's infantry fire. The battle ended in a crushing Swedish defeat. Charles IX's army lost at least 5,000 men killed and hundreds captured. Meanwhile, the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth suffered almost no losses. After the defeat, the Swedish king was forced to abandon the siege of Riga and retreat to Sweden, surrendering control of northern Latvia and part of Estonia. But even such a brilliant victory did not change the course of the war. The Commonwealth's treasury was empty, and the army remained unpaid for a long time. Eventually, in 1611, the parties were forced to agree to a truce. Hostilities resumed in 1617. The young Swedish king Gustavus II Adolphus took advantage of the Commonwealth's exhausting war with Muscovy. Just 4 months earlier, he had signed the Treaty of Stolbovo with the Muscovites and quickly redirected his forces westward. The weakened Commonwealth could not effectively resist the Swedish army. By the end of the summer, Sweden controlled all of Livonia except Riga. Krzysztof II Radziwiłł saved the Polish-Lithuanian forces in Livonia from total defeat. He was the first in the Commonwealth's history to use dragoons in battle, demonstrating exceptional energy, determination, and organizational skill. The Lithuanian troops quickly recaptured all the lost fortresses except Pärnu, which was too well fortified. The following year, the party signed a truce, leaving Pärnu under Swedish control. Despite battlefield successes, Gustavus II Adolphus understood that without military reform, he could not effectively challenge the Polish-Lithuanian army. His reforms covered all major aspects of the military, from organization to equipment, training, and discipline. The infantry was equipped with lighter muskets and improved entrenching tools. A clear system of battlefield rotations was introduced. Artillery became more mobile. Light cannons now accompanied infantry on the battlefield, allowing continuous fire. Dragoons, versatile units capable of fighting both mounted and dismounted, began to play a major role. The entire army became significantly more maneuverable, better trained, and capable of operating autonomously within tactical missions. Additionally, Sweden established a national recruitment system. Each region provided the required number of soldiers, allowing the army to remain combat ready without full mobilization. In the summer of 1621, Gustavus II Adolphus launched a new war against the Commonwealth. He exploited its ongoing conflict with the Ottoman Empire and its internal unrest. The Swedes advanced on the main city of Livonia, Riga. The Swedish fleet landed a large force on the shores near Riga. Infantry, cavalry, and artillery. Gustavus began the siege from three sides, concentrating his main forces on the southern bank of the Daugava. Riga held out, but lacked a sufficient garrison, and reinforcements arrived too late. On September 25th, the city surrendered. The Swedes gained the main commercial and strategic base in the eastern Baltic. Later, they captured Mitau, the capital of Courland. The following year, Swedish victories continued. They took Valmiera and several more fortresses. Meanwhile, Hetman Radziwiłł's army grew. The Lithuanians began to resist the Swedes. Radziwiłł captured Mitau, though the castle itself remained out of reach due to a lack of artillery. The fortress garrison surrendered only in summer. A few weeks later, the main Swedish forces arrived. A prolonged battle began. Neither side could prevail, so they signed a truce. Gustavus II Adolphus realized his treasury could not sustain such a long war. In autumn 1621, the Polish-Ottoman War ended. Thus, the Commonwealth's army was ready to advance into Livonia. The truce signed by the Lithuanians infuriated King Sigismund III. He had been preparing to transfer his main forces north and hoped, with Spanish naval support, to invade Sweden and reclaim the crown. Still, these hopes were in vain. Instead, in January 1626, the Swedes defeated the Commonwealth's forces under Jan Stanisław Sapieha at Valhof in Latvia. With this, Gustavus completed the conquest of Livonia, occupied southern Courland, and changed the direction of his offensive. He understood that the key to dominance in the Baltic was not Riga, but the trade cities of Prussia, especially Gdansk, through which most of the Commonwealth's grain exports to Western Europe flowed. Customs and trade taxes filled the Polish crown's treasury. In the summer of 1626, the Swedish fleet landed troops near Pillau. Within a few weeks, the Swedes captured Brunjevo, Elblong, Malbork, and Njev one after another. They took control of the lower Vistula, cutting Gdansk off from the rest of Prussia. In autumn, the Swedes fought a series of battles with Polish forces near Njev. Surprisingly, this confrontation ended in failure for Sigismund III, despite the Poles choosing the battlefield and having strategic initiative. Just as defeat seemed inevitable, the arrival of the Polish field crown hetman Stanisław Konietzpolski in Pomerania turned the tide. He employed a maneuver warfare tactic. Konietzpolski used small mobile units to strike enemy supply lines and other detachments to halt the Swedish advance. The following year, the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth achieved a series of victories in the war against Sweden. The crown hetman Konietzpolski launched a counteroffensive. As early as April, he recaptured Pucsk and seized Czarna, forcing Swedish troops to surrender. These successes expelled the Swedes from all their strongholds on the western bank of the Vistula. Gustavus II Adolphus himself arrived with reinforcements. However, during a river crossing, he was wounded in the thigh and had to retreat. Konietzpolski took advantage of this. he diverted Gustav's attention by sending part of his army toward Brunjevo, while he suddenly attacked and captured his main target, Mjev. Overall, the campaign was successful for the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth. Putsk and Mjev were recaptured, and Swedish plans were thwarted. The last major battle of the year took place near Oliwa, where the Swedish flotilla suffered an unexpected defeat by a small Polish fleet. In 1628, due to a lack of funds, the Polish forces were forced to cease their offensive and go on the defensive. Gustavus II Adolphus took advantage, capturing the towns of Kwidzyn, Nowe, and Brodnica. Koniecpolski attempted to counterattack, using his limited forces as effectively as possible. Poor financing nullified all his efforts. After the crown forces were defeated at Gujno, where Stanisław Potocki was routed by the Swedish troops under Hermann Wrangel, the same finally agreed to increase wartime spending. The final battle took place near Tyszczana. The Polish troops repelled a Swedish advance, forcing them to retreat. The crown hetman launched a brilliant attack on their rear guard and completely destroyed it. He also repelled a counterattack by Swedish reiters, led by King Gustavus Adolphus himself. The monarch was wounded and narrowly escaped. Only the timely arrival of the last Swedish reserves under Hermann Wrangel prevented a total defeat. Despite the victory of the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth, the unfavorable Truce of Altmark had to be signed. For many nobles and townspeople, this was worse than defeat. Sweden gained the right to tax all Polish trade passing through the Baltic, retained control of many towns in Royal Prussia, and effectively secured dominance over the southern Baltic coast. This agreement became a key milestone in strengthening Swedish influence in the region. In the mid-17th century, the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth plunged into internal crisis. A wave of protests erupted over the election of John II Casimir as king, followed by the National Liberation War led by Bohdan Khmelnytsky and territorial ambitions from neighboring powers. This weakened the state and paved the way for a new Swedish intervention. In 1655, the ambitious King of Sweden Charles X Gustav launched an invasion of the Commonwealth. His goal was to establish control over Prussia, Lithuania, and the entire Baltic coast. In July of the same year, two Swedish armies invaded the Commonwealth. One, led by Charles X himself, advanced west into Greater Poland. The second, under Magnus de Lagardy, entered Lithuania from the north. Greater Poland became the first major battlefield. The Polish army, exhausted from previous campaigns and demoralized by internal conflicts, was unprepared for battle. After a swift Swedish victory under Wittenberg at Ustrzyk and Poznan, the voivode of Poznan effectively handed the region over without resistance. In early September, the Swedish army entered the Polish capital. For the first time in history, a foreign army captured Warsaw. The idea of the untouchable crown fell along with the city gates. Meanwhile, in Lithuania, the situation unfolded differently. There, the second Swedish army encountered resistance. The Lithuanian hetman Janusz Radziwiłł, fearing a Muscovite invasion and distrusting the central government, signed the Union of Kadaniai. Under its terms, Lithuania recognized Swedish protection in exchange for autonomy. This dealt another blow to the unity of the Commonwealth. In November 1655, the Swedes laid siege to the Jasnogora Monastery in Lesser Poland. The defense of Jasnogora galvanized Polish resistance. News of the siege quickly spread, and partisan groups formed in several regions, outraged by the Swedish attempt to capture the monastery. In December, Colonel Gabriel Wojniewicz's unit defeated the Swedes near Krosno. This victory contributed to the formation of the Tyszowce Confederation. It was led by two men named Stanisław, Potocki and Lansoronski. The Confederation called for a national uprising against the Swedish occupation. In early 1656, John II Casimir began forming Polish forces near Lviv, mobilizing the noble levy. Commanders Konyetspolsky, Vishnoevyetsky, and Sobieski returned to his side with their troops. In March, Lithuanian units under Vilnius voivode Pavel Sapeha arrived to help. In the Battle of Yaroslav on March 15, 1656, a 22,000-strong Polish army, led by Stefan Czarniecki, achieved its first major victory over the Swedes. Soon after, they liberated Sandomierz, Lublin, and on July 1st, Warsaw. In October, the Commonwealth signed the Vilnius Truce with Moscow to strengthen its position. Even so, in response, Sweden, Transylvania, Brandenburg, and the Zaporizhian Sich signed the Treaty of Radnot. The combined Transylvanian, Cossack, and Swedish forces advanced quickly across Polish lands. They even managed to briefly recapture Warsaw. Though, the situation changed when the Dano-Swedish War unexpectedly broke out. Jarl's X Gustav was forced to withdraw most of his troops from the Commonwealth. The Transylvanian Cossack forces also retreated from the recently occupied territories. In 1658, the Polish army, together with its Austrian allies under Raimondo Montecuccoli, joined the war against Sweden. The campaign began in Royal Prussia, where several key cities remained under Swedish control. That year, the Poles recaptured Torun. Overall, joint military operations across Poland, Lithuania, and Livonia were so successful that the Allies were able to conduct several offensive operations in support of Denmark. Meanwhile, John Casimir concluded a separate peace with Brandenburg. The Swedish deluge officially ended on February 13, 1660, following the sudden death of Charles X Gustav. In May, the Treaty of Oliva was signed near Gdansk. Under its terms, King John II Casimir renounced claims to the Swedish throne. The Commonwealth recognized Swedish control over Estonia and most of Livonia, and Sweden, in turn, confirmed Polish suzerainty over Courland. Both sides also recognized the independence of Brandenburg, Prussia. The wars between the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth and the Swedish Empire were not just a series of armed conflicts. They determined the fate of the Baltic region for centuries. What began as a dynastic dispute between Sigismund III Vasa and his uncle Charles IX evolved into a massive struggle for control over northern trade routes. Livonia, Royal Prussia, and the Vistula River mouth. These strategic territories were too valuable to yield without a fight. Ultimately, exhausted by prolonged wars, internal instability, and fighting on multiple fronts, the Commonwealth lost a significant part of Livonia, opening the way for Sweden to dominate the Baltic. For Warsaw, it marked the beginning of a long decline. Weakening of military power, disorganization of state governance, and loss of control over crucial trade arteries. Meanwhile, Sweden reached the peak of its power, establishing itself as the leading force in the north. But this victory dragged it into new conflicts. The Polish-Swedish Wars not only redrew the map of northern Europe, but also marked a turning point in the fate of both nations. For one, the start of decline. For the other, the height of might. These wars showed that dynastic ambitions and economic interests could change the course of history, leaving a lasting mark on the fate of entire generations.